This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, we're almost at the end of another week, day 650 today of our war and, of course, of hostages still being held in Gaza. And the way that I kind of think about this is I try to imagine to myself like that situation that I was in where I was really suffering and feeling like I didn't want to be here, like maybe I'd been in some place for a few hours or I was staying in some crummy location which was just not very hospitable and I couldn't wait to get out of there. And then I try and multiply that by a million and then by 650 days. And I can't imagine what the hostages are going through right now. But it's day 650. Oh. And it's just unbelievable. I do want to end off this week of talking about some snippets from the 12-day war by talking about the revelation that came out over the last week or so that something like five Israeli military installations were actually hit or damaged by Iranian missiles during the 12-day war. And there has been no concerted attempt to deny this fact. And it seems quite likely that it's true that Israeli military installations were hit during the 12-day war by Iranian missiles. I don't know if it was five or less or more, but it sounds like a reasonable number. And I could personally vouch for the fact that I saw a fire and smoke coming from a location which looked suspiciously close to a very, very well-known military installation in central Israel. And it was clear that that installation had been targeted and potentially even hit because the smoke was coming from that particular vicinity and it was billowing for quite some hours. It had gone on for 3, 4, 5 hours that the fire seemed to rage there before it was finally put out. And of course, we all know that there was significant damage caused in Tel Aviv to the area that surrounds military headquarters, the Kiryah in Tel Aviv. So I think that it's quite feasible that Israeli installations were hit. I think what's important to note here is that there were no soldiers or personnel killed in those hits. And it seems as though they did really very little, if any, significant damage, and certainly no damage that could have affected Israel's persecution of that war, the way in which the war was actually conducted. There are some people who like to use the fact that the Kiryah, the military headquarters, is right in the central part of Tel Aviv by saying that, oh, well, that's a human shield trying to help to protect military headquarters. But for those people who know the military headquarters in Tel Aviv, the Kiryah, they will know that it's been like that for many, many, many years from the founding of the state and onwards. And the possibility to move that now seems almost impossible because of the amount of infrastructure and what goes on, what's been built into that area, not only above the ground where there are a number of new buildings that are actually visible from outside, but also what goes on below the ground, which is a legendary but not really well known to all of us. And so we understand that that's not a feasible possibility. But I think here comes the kicker. And the kicker is that even though I saw that fire billowing from that very, very strategic military site in central Israel, I also understand that those sites had been completely evacuated prior to the outbreak of this war. So I know from firsthand stories of soldiers who have been relocated to other parts of Israel from those military installations that were considered to be high risk and potentially without proper protection or whatever. Those places were empty, completely empty of personnel, and those people had moved elsewhere and picked up their operations from somewhere else where we understand that it had all gone on as usual. So that's another little background piece of information about the 12-day war.
It's incredible that slowly this information comes out, but it also shows you what a significant war it actually was. After a day with a significant escalation in the battle between Druze and Syrian government troops, a ceasefire was announced. That was late last night. What is the latest?
Well, yesterday, the massacre of the Druze continued, and the Israeli intervention also escalated during the course of the day. And so we had that horrific event where there were videos that were published of Druze being massacred in a hospital in the area of Suwayda in Syria, with Syrian government forces going in, literally going in and finding people who were in hospital because they'd been injured by the battle, and then simply massacring them in their beds. That's essentially the way the things worked out. And I didn't notice any protests or United Nations resolutions talking about what's been going on in Suwayda and in Syria and the attack against the Druze. But then during the course of the day, we saw more and more Israeli intervention. First of all, it came in the form of Air Force bombs being dropped in the area of Suwayda in southern Syria where the battles were going on. But then as the day progressed, those attacks by Israeli Air Force then escalated to Damascus itself, to the capital of Syria, where we saw on live TV during a news broadcast, ironically, in the middle of the sentence that the broadcaster was saying about what Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz had said about Israel getting more involved in the war, you could see in the window right behind the broadcaster, because the windows were open, the curtains were open, and you could see out into Damascus outside behind her, a bomb drop right on Syrian military headquarters in Damascus. She got a huge fright, screamed, and jumped out of her presenter's seat. That was all on live TV in Syria yesterday. So those missiles were dropped not only on military headquarters in Damascus, but also missiles were dropped very, very near to the presidential palace in Damascus, Syria, to send a message not only to the Syrian military, but to also al-Julani, the Syrian president, about what he is allowing his troops to do. And I think what's also quite notable is that many of the pictures of the Syrian troops coming out from those who are operating in the Suwayda area in southern Syria show that some of the troops have got the ISIS badge on their uniforms, where they're going around representing the Syrian government with an ISIS logo on their uniforms. So all of this, if this is confusing to any of you about exactly how the politics are shaping up in the Middle East, then I'm going to confuse you even further by saying that about a week ago, there were reports of Israeli government officials, senior government officials, meeting with Syrian senior government officials in Azerbaijan to potentially promote the idea of a truce, an ongoing peace with Syria. A week later, we are bombing Syrian military headquarters in Damascus, and we are dropping bombs near to the presidential palace in Damascus to send a message that the Druze are effectively off limits and that Julani needs to do whatever he can do in order to pull his troops away from Suwayda and to pull them away from attacking the Druze, who are a minority group and who really don't justify the kind of massacre that has been carried out against them over the last few days. What's more, the Druze community in Israel decided that they were going to try to take things into their own hands. They swarmed across the border. They literally just opened holes in the border fence and just started to swarm on foot over the border to literally run to try to help their fellow brethren in Syria. The irony irony is that Suwayda is about 100 kilometers away from the Syrian border, and it was unlikely that they were going to get there by foot anytime soon. But they were sending a message that they weren't going to allow this to continue without some intervention. So, as you said, Howard, late last night we heard that there'd been a ceasefire, not before Syrian President al-Jilani accused Israel of fueling chaos in Suwayda, which is somewhat ironic given that it was his troops who went in there to commit the massacre against the Druze. But this is just another day in the Middle East where massacres can be carried out of this nature, and no one will say a word unless, of course, Israel becomes involved. And then, of course, it's Israel sowing chaos and causing confusion. So all of that seemed to have come to something of a halt late last night. There are no reports this morning of any further escalations, but I think that Israel has sent the clearest possible message that it is not going to allow the Druze to be massacred without coming in to defend them. And if they're going to attack the Druze, then they're going to have to deal with the full brunt of the IDF, which was shown to come into operation yesterday. And if we thought a week ago that Syria and Israel were moving towards some sort of a peace arrangement, well, today, I think we're less sure about that.
You know what, Anthony? I am sure about that, because I've been looking at some of the comments made by the Israeli, the Syrian leader. Oh, this just seems to be a bit of a strange interference. There we go. And he's making comments about the safety of minorities. I think they're going to pull it right back and carry on where they were. That's my sense. I think it's in everybody's interest. And this is going to be seen within a few days just as a little blip. I mean, that's how I'm calling it. But let's see. You may well be right.
You may well be right. It's unclear to me why the Syrian government would have in its interest to attack the Druze. I don't know why that's a thing, why that would help them in any way, why that promotes their cause. I think that this is just potentially some way of just getting some nervous energy out of the troops. They seem to me be wanting to get involved in some battles, and that seems a justified target. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little cynical, but I didn't really understand what the strategy is about trying to attack the news.
So anyway, we'll definitely keep an eye on this story. I see that President Trump has announced that there's good news on Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, so again, the press are kind of talking things up and saying that a deal is more likely than not. There are reports that Israel has compromised further on one of the critical issues regarding the continued presence of Israeli troops in Gaza. And from what I've read, it seems as though Israel has been willing to somehow compromise and to pull back on one of its demands about keeping Israeli troops in Gaza after the ceasefire. And that seems to have opened up the prospect of a ceasefire, and also clearly alongside that, and most importantly perhaps for us, the release of hostages. And all of this kind of brings a question to my mind, which I'd like to share with the listeners, about Israel's attitude and Israel's approach to negotiating the ceasefire and allowing the release of the hostages. On the one hand, there are people who are saying, just give whatever they want. Just say yes to every demand in order to get the hostages home. And then if afterwards we don't adhere to whatever we've agreed to, so be it. Then we'll just go back in and do what we need to do if we decide that that's what needs to be done. But at the moment, you just need to say yes to every demand and forget about negotiating your position. That's one camp. The other camp says, be honest in your negotiations. And if you feel that you want to keep Israeli troops in Gaza after the ceasefire and potentially longer term, then negotiate that in good faith into the agreement now, even if it means holding up an agreement and even if it means delaying the release of hostages. Those are the two approaches which are kind of in conflict with each other at the moment within Israeli society. And I just wonder what you guys think about the two approaches. Should we just say, give them the kitchen sink, agree to everything, not in good faith, doesn't matter. Just bring the hostages home. We'll say yes to every word that you say, as long as it means bringing the hostages home. But then potentially it shows an air of desperation. It shows that you are not serious in the negotiation, that you don't really care. You're just trying to extract the hostages at any price, and that whatever you're agreeing to is clearly not to be believed, because if you're just simply saying yes to everything, it's obvious that you don't intend to stick to it. So I'm very conflicted by the two approaches. And when I see that Israel's compromised, and as a result, it's compromised, this may well result in the release of hostages. People are saying, I don't understand why Prime Minister Netanyahu didn't give that compromise last week, last month, last year. Why did we have to wait now, today 650, in order to give that compromise to allow the doors to come open for the hostages to come home? I think that there's a real dilemma. And, you know, I'm interested to know what you guys think, because for me, I don't know what the answer is. Seriously, I mean, I do want the hostages to come home at any price. There's no doubt about that. Does that mean we negotiate in bad faith? Question.
061-895-1019. Help us out here. What are your thoughts on this? Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Thank you for a phenomenal week of Israel reporting. We'll catch you on Monday morning. In the meantime, have a fantastic weekend and a Shabbat Shalom.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.